Today is a very special day in the Vaishnava, or on the Vaishnava calendar. It's the appearance day of Shripad Madhvacharya, the great acharya who our disciplic succession is named after, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So that's pretty interesting. So we are followers of Shripad Madhvacharya in one sense, and we're a specific branch, and we're going to be describing about that since tonight's or this morning's class, depending on where you live in the world, is dedicated to Shripad Madhvacharya. How about that? And tomorrow is Ramanujacharya's appearance. So we're going to be giving class in the morning and also in the evening about Shripad Ramanujacharya. So a lot of festivals coming up, and of course on Tuesday, where we are, or Monday, sorry, the Monday, yeah, that's Lord Nityananda's appearance day, and then, yes, then we got all sorts of festivals coming up, so we'll be seeing everybody for all those festivals. And first we want to chant, okay, since it's Madhvacharya, we'll chant, oh, hey, Vaishnava Thakur, and let me get my songbook. All right. We just got back from New Taliban, our farm community in near New Orleans, but it's in Mississippi.
Vaishnava Thakur Yar Sadhu Edase Karuna Kori Diyapada Jaya Jodohe Amaya Toma Raja Jaya Bhagatami Usha Jodi Jaya Guna Deho Nase Jaya Satsanga Deho E Amare Boshe Chisangera Ekake amara Poe bolo Arinam sankirtane Tumi kripa kore Shraddha bindu diya Deo Krishna Namatame Krishna say tomorrow Iti paro Tumara Sukade Ache Amito Gangala Krishna, Krishna, Bodhi, Daitava, Bache, Bache. Amito Gangala, Krishna, Krishna, Bodhi, Daitava, Bache. Yeah. Vaishnavata Arasaka Eda Say Karuna Ko. Jaya Shunga Heya Maya Tomarat Jaranadane
Vishnu Pad Padamahansa Paravidikacharya Asta Tela Satishi Shimad His Divine Grace Savaya Charana Anabhakavananda Gosami Srila Prabhupada Kijai Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijai Ananda Koti Vaishnav Vrinda Kijai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kijai Pren se koho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Parabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrindagajaya Shishi Radha Krishna Gopikopatna Shyam Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturadam Kijai Jagadatha Sami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Shimani Lassi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindagajai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. All glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees. All glorious to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Budle Srimadi Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Namani Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharani Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deja Tarane. So, Omagana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shalakya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So, as I mentioned before, let me get a few things set up here, but that's not what I mentioned before. As I was mentioning, today is the, actually it's a disappearance day, of Shripad Madhvacharya, who is actually one of the heads of our Sampradaya. We're in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. What does that mean? That Lord Brahma, actually Krishna is the first person. There's four Sampradayas. First Sampradaya, of course, Brahma Sampradaya, Rudra Sampradaya, Lakshmi Sampradaya, and the Kumara Sampradaya. So there's four basic Sampradayas. And we are a member of the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Okay? And so our Sampradaya, as all Sampradayas start, our Sampradaya started with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead spoke to who? Lord Brahma. Brahma, he spoke to Narada, Narada spoke to Vyasadeva, and there's a direct connection between Vyasadeva and Sri Padmadvacharya. So with that in mind, we're going to speak about Sri Padmadvacharya. Sri Padmadvacharya is in one sense one of my favorite acharyas. Why is he one of my favorite acharyas? Well, it involves, let me just adjust a few things here. Okay, so it involves my favorite personalities. Yes, I know that. You don't have to tell me that. That's what I was getting to. And who are my favorite personalities? My favorite personalities are Bhimsen and Hanuman and, of course, Madhvacharya. And all of them are extremely strong because they are all Vayuputras. Vayuputras means they're sons of Vayu. Of course, Hanuman is not only a son of Vayu, he's the son of Anjani and Kesari. He's the son of Lord Shiva. And there's all sorts of pastimes, which I'm not going to talk about right now. So, therefore, let's talk about Madhvacharya. So, once upon a time, many, many years ago, before Madhvacharya appeared, let me just get this, I'm trying to straighten everything out, so, okay. Before Madhvacharya appeared, as is the case with all the acharyas and the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there was irreligion. Because as Krishna says in the Gita, what? Yada, yada, hidharamasya, glanir bharati bharata, abhyutanam adharamasya, tadatmanam jamiham. That actually, Krishna comes, or his incarnations, or Shaktivesha avatars, of whom Madhvacharya is one of them, they come to establish religious principles and annihilate the miscreants and protect the devotees. So, you can understand there was a need for Madhvacharya to come down. And also Krishna says in the Gita something very interesting, that he was teaching the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna because the science, yoganasta parantapa, the science of Bhagavad Gita was actually lost. And you may say, why was it lost? Well, it wasn't lost, but it was lost to humankind. The reason it was lost to humankind is because the cyclic successions are only as strong as the weakest link. In other words, if you have one link in the cyclic succession that doesn't properly convey the information, doesn't properly convey the spiritual practices, then at that particular point, guess what? You got a broken cyclic succession. So therefore, the Lord and his devotees have to appear from time to time to reestablish religious principles, and that's the case with Sri Padmadvacharya. So what happened to predict Madhvacharya's advent? There was a man who was acting very crazy, and he was in Udupi. Of course, Udupi is the place where Madhvacharya appeared. And he was going through the streets crying out, "Oh, soon the wind god's son will appear in Udupi." And nobody could understand what he was saying, but Krishna, or Krishna's devotees, were speaking through him. And so his parents wanted to have a great personality. Okay, great personality as their son. As is the case of all these great personalities that are born, they have great personality parents, you know, great pure devotee parents. So they did this fast. His father and mother did this fast for 12 years, in which they both drank only milk. Oh my God. Only milk for 12 years. Phew. So after 12 years, they actually had one sex life, basically. And as a result, the mother became pregnant, and then little baby Madhvachari was born. But he was very, very strong and very, very, of course, very, very pure from the beginning, because he was a pure devotee and is a pure devotee, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So shortly after his birth, they took Madhvacharya to the temple in Udupi. And as they were taking him back from the temple at night, they ran into a man who was possessed by a rakshasa. You see this sometimes. Actually, if people take intoxication, I got news for you, you get possessed by lower entities, and you think that you're actually in spiritual life, you think that you're actually understanding things, but it's a rakshasa, or demons, or ghosts at the very least. You know, the best possible scenario was just a plain old ghost, not Casper, of course, and you're possessed. And you think everything's going all right. I mean, this is an illusion. We understand we have a tendency to be an illusion. It's one of the four defects of a conditioned soul. And if you don't think you're a conditioned soul, you're in trouble, buddy. Okay, so what happened is Rakshasa was running around. Well, he possessed a man. So it wasn't just a Rakshasa, but a man possessed by Rakshasa. So what happened is his little baby, he put his feet, or somehow his feet, touched the Rakshasa, or the man possessed by the Rakshasa. And the man immediately came back into normal consciousness. And he was just like, wow, what's happened? Even as a baby, his lotus feet, the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee, it's very powerful. I was having a discussion with a devotee, Pran Govinda, actually today, about how one could understand everything if one takes the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee. And so he was saying, how is that possible? You can understand everything. Well, it's very easy to understand, because Krishna says, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenamam Upyanti Te in the Gita, Dharateshyam Satati Yuktanam. If someone's devoted to me, and the only way to be devoted to Krishna is to be devoted to Krishna's devotee, as Krishna says in the Adi Purana. So one's devoted to me, I give him the intelligence, boop, by which he can come to me. And so therefore you have people like Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, who are the most intelligent and know more about Krishna consciousness than I will ever know, even if I've read all the Vedic literatures 1,000 times. Or even Shukadeva Goswami, who didn't go to school. And there's so many other stories of people who were illiterate and had super intelligence because they got the mercy of Krishna's devotee. So, but remember, he's getting back to, of course, getting back to Madhvacharya. He's an incarnation or manifestation of Vayuputra. He's the son of Vayu. And so he could eat a lot. He had digestion. I mean, he can literally eat nails, and we're going to tell a story. So as far as his dealings with his mother, he had to drink his mother's milk every half an hour. I mean, his poor mother was probably completely exhausted. Of course, Krishna empowered her because she had the great Madhvacharya as her son. I mean, Krishna certainly provides for Madhvacharya. So when it came time for his anaprasna, that means it's a particular ceremony, samskara, and during the ceremony the child gets his or her first grains. Usually you give mahaprasadam and stuff like that, and I've done many of those ceremonies. I may say a sannyasi does those ceremonies. Well, not my children, the children of people who I know or disciples. And so I give them their first grains. Usually it's sweet rice, kheer. And we take a little spoon, like anyone's done it or seen me do it. I take a little spoon and I put it in their mouth, and they make a little face. And after a while they get adjusted taking a little more, but it's not much you can give them, like 3, 4, 5 little tiny spots on a spoon, not even the whole spoon. You don't give them the whole spoon, just a little bit of the spoon, and then they start to like it. But that's it, because they're babies. But when it came time for his anaprasana, his sister fed him, listen to this, 40 kilos of horse grains. Now, for those of you in America, a kilo is 2.2 pounds. Oh my God. That's like 90, just about 90 pounds of horse grains. That's not possible. But for Madhvacharya, it was possible because he was strong. Even in his interactions with his disciples, he exhibited his strength. He was wrestling them. Quite an unusual guru. He had wrestling matches with his disciples, and we'll talk about that a little later. Even so, he was so strong when he was young that sometimes he would play by grabbing a bull's tail and ride all day long being pulled by the bull. Now, I don't advise you to pull a bull's tail. Bulls can get very angry. They are male cows, and they have a temper. But he was able to take care of that. And he also had mystic powers from his very birth. Once upon a time, his father owed a lot of money to a creditor. In other words, someone who he lent money from. So in India, owing money is considered really, really bad. And if someone is owed money, in other words, if someone's a creditor, the way they collect is they go to your house and they just sit outside until you give them the money, and they destroy your reputation. I mean, it's really a mess. You know, in America, it wouldn't work like that. Someone sat outside your house, you would say, okay, just do it, you know, go away. In America, you just go to bankruptcy court or something like that. But he had this debt, and Madhvacharya saw this man sitting outside his father's house, or his house, and he was thinking, why is this man here? So he went to the man and said, why are you here? He said, your father owes me money, and I'm just going to sit here until your father pays the money. So Madhvacharya thought, I'll pay him. So he got some tamarind seeds. You know, anyway, I think you all know what tamarind seeds are. And a handful of tamarind seeds. And he gave it to this particular individual and said, here, little kid, you know, just a little kid, cute as the dickens. And he gave it to him and he said, here, I am paying back my father's debt. And what happened is that those tamarind seeds turned to gold. And the creditor went, wow. But first he was enamored with Madhvacharya. He was ready to accept even the cuteness of Madhvacharya or the tamarind seeds as payment for his debt. Because Madhvacharya, being a pure devotee, dhira dhira jana priyo, priyakuro, as described by the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Everyone loved them. Whether people were dhira or adhira, in other words, whether people were devotees or non-devotees or whatever they were, they loved them. Just like Prabhupada, everyone who met Prabhupada loved Prabhupada. Even people who Prabhupada blasted because they were speaking some nonsense. So, very, very powerful. So there's other stories too that he was able to walk many, many, many miles and save people. He saved a baby one time that was lost by walking many kilometers to take him to his parents while the parents were at a marriage ceremony. But as a student, he learned everything immediately. That's called Shrutidhar. When he heard something, immediately memorized it without any question. Anything. He became so expert that his father, of course, was also Brahmin. So he would correct his father And his father got, what's happening here? My son is correcting me. You know, it's quite a blow to the ego to have your son correct you when you're trying to, really speak some philosophy or speak from the Vedic literatures. His father was a Puranic reciter, a reciter of the Puranas. So when he was 5 years old, this happened, when he was like 5 years old. When he was 5 years old, he got his Upanayanam, that means the Brahmin thread. That was the tradition in India at that time, and also in Brahminical families now, that at 5 or 6, and sometimes 7, they would get a Brahmin thread and get the first line of the Gayatri mantra, which is called the Brahma Gayatri. So it's similar, at a similar age, he had to deal with a snake demon. There was a snake demon that appeared outside of his house, and this snake demon was had three heads. I guess it's mutation or something, and so he just killed the snake demon with his toe. It's described in Madhvacharya's biography that the snake demon was previously a demon that was killed by Bhimsen, his brother. But when his mother wanted to see him, his mother had no trouble. His mother didn't have to call him on a cell phone or anything. His mother would just yell loudly, "Madhva, Madhva, Madhva," and he was able to jump one single leap many kilometers. So, because he was Vayuputra, like Hanuman. Hanuman was able to jump over the sea to Lanka to find Sita Devi. So when he started to go to school, he already knew everything. And so his teachers said, "Why aren't you studying like everybody else?" And he says, "I know everything." His teacher said, "Okay, recite this verse or that verse." And he perfectly recited them and performed miracles with his teacher's son. His teacher's son had a headache, and Madhvacharya, who was known as Vasudeva at that point, Vasudeva, blew into the ear of his teacher's son, and the headache was cured. Like that. So, this is a very interesting story. So later on, he became very attracted to a guru named Achyuta Preksha. So Achyuta Preksha, very interesting personality, was a impersonalist, a Mayavadi. And his previous life, Achyuta Preksha's previous life, you can see how he got his Sukriti to come in contact with his disciple Madhvacharya, because later on Madhvacharya became the guru of his guru. The same thing happened with Sripad Ramanujacharya. So what happened is that in his previous life, he was a bumblebee. This is mentioned in the biographies of Madhvacharya. He was a bumblebee, and that bumblebee was actually fed one time prasadam by Draupadi. And because that bumblebee got prasadam by Draupadi, he became so pious that that bumblebee didn't have to go through all the other species of life going up to human being. That bumblebee became a human being and became the guru of Madhvacharya. And so, Madhvacharya, though, was so attracted to this guru, because the guru, this is an interesting point, too, because the guru was very ingenious as to how to make disciples. He would have these little children come, and he would give all the children sweets. That's nice, isn't it? Give all the children sweets. And the children were thinking, at least Madhvacharya was thinking, this is a sweet guru. So if you want to make disciples like 10 years from now, 20 years from now, then you start feeding children a lot of sweets. And so he would call him the sweet guru. But this worked very quickly with Madhvacharya. Of course, he was meant to be the disciple of Achyuta Preksha, and Achyuta Preksha was ultimately meant to be the disciple of Madhvacharya. But anyway, it's a pastime. So Madhvacharya wanted to take sannyas when he was like 7 or 8 years old. But his parents were really upset. Why were they upset? Because he was the only son in the family. Now in India, what does a son mean? A son means that's your future, that's your retirement, that's your protection. Because not only will you get the son, but you'll get the son's wife later on, and the son's family, that his little grandkitties. And so everything, you know, the son, and if you have a daughter, she goes off to marry her husband's family. You know, she integrates with her husband's family. So that's lost. You got nobody to take care of you. What are you going to do? You know, you need to get a son. That's what everyone is thinking. Of course, the daughter should also take care of her parents. You know, it's not that you should neglect your parents just because you married into some other family. It's an illusion. So anyway, so Madhvacharya's parents were upset. You know, he wants to take sannyas. He actually went to his guru's ashram and said, I'm not coming back. And his parents went to his guru, Achyuta Preksha, and said, please give us a son back. We have no son. And Madhvacharya was thinking, oh my God, they are so attached and so entangled in this world. Where is their faith in Krishna? And he said, okay, I'll make a deal. Let's make a deal. And the deal will be that if you have another son, then I can just get out of there and take sannyas. Hidibo. And they were thinking, this is not going to happen. We're quite old. You know, mother and father, Madhvacharya, we're quite old. But lo and behold, they had a son. And as soon as the son was born, that was the deal. That's the deal Madhvacharya made. I'm out of here. Not me. Madhvacharya was out of there. And Madhvacharya took sannyas from his guru at 9 years of age. Wow. That's pretty interesting. And so then he began to serve his spiritual master. And while he was serving his spiritual master, his spiritual master got really attached to him. He couldn't live without Madhvacharya. So he didn't even want to give Madhvacharya permission to go to see the Ganges, because remember, he was in Udupi, which is all the way in western India, and the Ganges is in northeast, or at least north, mid-north and northeast. So he wouldn't give Madhvacharya permission. So Madhvacharya, by his mystic potency, enabled the Ganges mystically to come to Udupi every 12 years. And they have a festival in Udupi about the Ganges coming every 12 years. And then he had so many arguments, not only with his guru, but with other personalities. There was a big pundit called Vasudev. He was called Vasudev. So he had defeated a pundit, and he established the proper meaning of Bhagawan. And he was given another name by his guru, and his guru gave him the name Anandatirtha. Tirtha means a place that where you can go from one place to another, crossing place. And Ananda means bliss, the blissful, holy place. So Ananda Tirtha. And then he was appointed by his guru to be the head of the moth. The moth means the guru's particular organization. So as he was the head of the moth, many people came to challenge him because there were different philosophical groups. It's interesting, in India, people were more civilized if they had some other philosophical education or opinion. They didn't actually attack and kill each other over philosophy. I mean, that's crazy. That's a Western thing. That, you know, you have Jews, Christians, Muslims, and all these other people. They actually fight each other over philosophical differences. That's pretty stupid. Of course, that's a Middle Eastern thing, and that's a Western thing. In India, they're more intelligent. They just argue, and the person who argues wins. No blood. Pretty good. No blood, no injury, and everybody remains a friend. So some Jains came to argue with Madhvacharya as the head of the math, and they ran away because they couldn't win. But then the head of all the Buddhists came. His name was Bodhisagara. Means an ocean, basically an ocean of knowledge. Sagara. Bodhisagara, an ocean of knowledge. And Bodhisagara came one day and said, I challenge you to a debate. And Madhvacharya said, okay, just come the next day, no problem. We'll have a nice debate. And at night, Bodhisagara got really nervous. Oh my God, if I lose this debate, I will have to surrender to him. And then I'll have to surrender all my disciples to him. This is really a disaster. And so in the middle of the night, he just ran away. That was intelligent. I mean, I would have run away too if I was Bodhisagara. Very, very intelligent. So, anyway, continuing with this. Another thing is the name of Madhvacharya. Madhu means honey and nectar, Ananda. Acharya, of course, Madhavananda, Madhu honey, nectar. And it also means bliss. And Acharya means, of course, everything. Everybody knows what Acharya means. If someone is an Acharya, that means that they are the leaders of a particular organization. Let me just have a little problem, see with the computer. Hold on a second. I'm just checking my notes on this. There's a lot more information. Give me one second. Very interesting. Hold on a second. Something is happening here. All right. Just give me one second. I have to just rectify what's happening on with my notes on the screen. Okay, there's a lot more. Okay, so also it's understood that just like when he was a kid, he had a great appetite and was able to eat a tremendous amount of food. One time he had a big meal and someone offered him 100 plantains, that means bananas, and he ate them all without a problem. So then he started to travel further to the south to deal with different philosophers, and then there was the head of the Shankarites, whose name was Vidyashankara, who tried to harass him and tried to steal his books, because Madhvacharya would always quote from his books. But still, Madhvacharya was able to defeat him, and in fact, Madhvacharya had him arrested later by the king, who was Madhvacharya's disciple. Another time, another miracle he performed, there was a pregnant lady in the village, and the village had no water, so he put his dund in the ground, and the well came up. Then he went to see Vyasadeva in Uttara Badri in the Himalayas. Of course, he goes all the way from the south to the north. And as he was going there, his great disciple, his personal assistant, Satyatirtha, tried to follow him. But Madhvacharya was able to fly up there, this is Uttara, which is not Uttara Badri, which is not accessible to any of us. So Madhvacharya just flew up there and he waved his hand, and Satyatirtha flew back to the base camp. That means where all of the rest of the disciples were. And there in Uttara Badri, he showed his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita to Srila Vyasadeva, because Srila Vyasadeva is still there in Uttara Badri. And then later on, he composed a commentary on the Brahma Sutra, and that's the Vedanta Sutra, in case you don't know, in which he analyzed it according to Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Sambandha means basically the philosophy of Krishna consciousness dealing with tattvas, you know, who we are, what the spirit soul, who the spirit soul is, etc. Abhideya means how do you practice devotional service or spiritual realization, and Prayojana means what is the goal of devotional service. And then there was uncovered the Bhavishya Purana, which told the story, or tells the story, of Madhvacharya meeting with Lord Chaitanya in Navadvip. Wow, when he met with Lord Chaitanya in Navadvip, this is actually a very, very esoteric story. He was told not to talk about Achincha Veda Veda Tattva, as the world was not ready. What does Achincha Veda Veda Tattva mean? That means Krishna is one and different from everything simultaneously and conceivably. So he was simply told to teach, that Ms. Madhvacharya was told to teach the philosophy of Dvaita, and he's known for the philosophy of Dvaita, means extreme dualism. There's the Lord, and there's the material energy, and it's separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But we understand the material energy is the Lord's, not only creation, it's expansion of the Lord's internal potency. Mayatatamidam sarvam jagadavyakta martina matstani sarvabhutane naham teshvavasitaha. That by Krishna, by his unmanifested form, in other words, that's a form of Krishna. But not a spiritual form, but it's a form of Krishna. And in one sense, it's non-different from Krishna. In another sense, it's different. And the Prabhupada gives the example, and the Vedas give the example of the sun and the sunshine. In one sense, the sun is the same as the sunshine. In another sense, it's different. So what emanates from Krishna is, in one sense, the same as Krishna. Like we say, let the sun in. You're not actually letting the sun globe in. You're letting the sunlight in. Because if you let the sun globe in, you would be cremated immediately. That's a fact. So he was told not to describe Achincha Veda Veda Tattva. He was told simply to talk about Veda, the duality between the material world and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not the connection. So, and he, because it was up to, he wanted to leave it up to Lord Chaitanya later on. So, while he was meditating one time in Udupi, in 1285, the year 1285, there was a ship that was sort of on a sandbar, and he saved the ship. Wow. This is such an interesting story. He saved the ship by creating wind, because he's the wind god's son. And he did that as he was swimming. And they said, well, we want to give you a gift for what you've done. And he said, I simply want some of what you have in the boat, which is Gopi Chandan, you know, for worshiping the deity. So he put the Gopi Chandan in the lake, it dissolved, and a deity of Balakrishna came out. Wow. And that's the main deity that's worshipped in Udupi today. So then, he also worshipped deities of Sitaram, and there's a wonderful story about these deities. So once upon a time, these deities were being worshipped in the sun god's dynasty, Sitaram, before Sitaram appeared. Wow. And they were passed down, Vivaswan, Manu, Ikshvaku. Eventually, as they were being passed down through son to father to son, father to son, they arrived at the palace of Sitaram. I was going to say real, but they're real also. The deities are real also. This also proves that the pastimes of Sitaram are nitya, or eternal. So anyway, they arrived at the palace of Sitaram, and Lord Ram didn't want to worship his own deities. That would have been not a good example. So what happened is that he put the deities in a closet. There was to make a long story short, there was a Brahmin who had taken a vow never to eat unless he saw Sitaram that day. And Ram felt really sorry for him because many days Ram was absent, gone to the forest for many, many years. Not years, but many days. This is after he became a king again. And so the Brahmin gave him those deities. And later on, the Brahmin gave those deities to Hanuman. And later on, Hanuman gave those deities to Madhvacharya. And those deities are still there in Udupi today. Another interesting story is when a wrestler came and challenged him. And he said to the wrestler, if you could just move one toe of mine, I will say that you've won. And the wrestler, with all the strength, couldn't move the big toe of Sripad Madhvacharya. Wow. Then on one of his many pilgrimages, he was stopped by a king who was digging a lake. The king stopped all the different people on pilgrimage. And he actually engaged the king in digging the lake. And what happened is that they found water. The water came out, and the king was very pleased with him, and the king decided to become a disciple of Sripad Madhvacharya. So once upon a time, he was so intelligent, too, that there were some thieves, and they wanted to steal something, so he gave them a bag of stones, which they thought were jewels, and they fought with each other and killed each other off. Then he went to Vyasadev, and Vyasadev told him to explain the Mahabharata. Wow. And then he came down and he wrote this commentary on the Mahabharata called the Tatparya Niranaya. That means the truth of the Mahabharata from the first-person perspective. Also wrote a commentary on the Ramayana. And he took many disciples to Hastinapur and told them all the stories, this is interesting, from memory about the Battle of Kurukshetra. And about the Mahabharata stories. Because he was present there. Or at least his brother was present there. So he knew everything that had occurred. In fact, he even knew where Bhima's club was. So he uncovered it. He dug it out of the ground. And then, of course, he reburied it. And he went around Kurukshetra. And he said, this happened here. This happened there. This is where, Abhimanyu was attacked. This is where Arjuna killed this person. This is where Grandfather Bhishma was lying on the bed of arrows. And he gave a whole tour of Kurukshetra to his disciples. Pretty interesting. Phew. And one time he showed another mystic trick. Was that he sung some Vedic mantras to a seed which grew into a tree and bore fruits immediately. Similar to Lord Chaitanya's story about the mango tree that would always produce mangoes all year round. And so one of his great disciples was King Jayasingha, who really, on his behest, imprisoned many Mayavadis who had tried to defeat Madhvacharya, not because they tried to defeat him, but because they had stolen books before from Madhvacharya. So he left this world as he was speaking a commentary on the Upanishads. And when he left, the demigods started to shower flowers on him and covered him with flowers. And when they covered him with flowers, and the disciples took away the flowers, he was not there anymore. He was gone. Or his transcendental body was gone. So these are wonderful stories about Shripad Madhvacharya, the great personality whom we are in the disciplic succession from. And of course our presentation of the philosophy is a little bit different from Madhvacharya's presentation, because we present Achinjabheda Bheda Tattva. Another point about Madhvacharya's presentation is that he doesn't comment on the Brahma Vimohana Leela. Brahma Vimohana Leela is the Leela or pastime in which Lord Brahma stole the coward boys and the calves from Krishna. So the reason Madhvacharya doesn't comment on that is because Lord Brahma is the preceptor that started our disciplic succession. Of course, we're in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So he didn't want to offend that preceptor. Now, one may say, well, he's right. Yes, he is right. However, from another perspective, we see that many times great, unalloyed, pure devotees, which means the same thing, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, enact certain pastimes with the Lord where it appears that they were in an illusion, doesn't it? And, you know, if you think about the Tulsi Shalagram Vivaha story, that's a very well-known story, and you have great devotees like Sudama and Tulsi and Viraja Devidasi, who are cursed. You have Srimati Radharani cursing. I mean, that's pretty heavy to be cursed by Srimati Radharani. But they're pure devotees. And then they come down to the earth, and then you have Shankachuda, who is apparently in Maya, or maybe he's not in Maya, and Tulsi, who's so attached to him, in spite of being a pure devotee of Srimati Radharani and Krishna. So I take what happened with Lord Brahma, the Brahma Vimohana Leela, as a pastime, not as an offensive act or an act in Maya by a great personality. It's not a fall down. But Madhvacharya took it from a different angle, which we can accept. I mean, you really don't want to hear about any of your preceptors being in illusion, do you? I mean, sometimes, like, let's even talk about Srila Prabhupada. You hear about Srila Prabhupada having a dream and having his spiritual master tell him, take sannyas, come with me, come with me, come with me. And Srila Prabhupada said he was horrified. So you may say, how can a pure devotee be horrified when he's told to renounce everything? Doesn't that indicate attachment? Well, we take this as a... just looking at something else. I'm not looking at notes. We take this as a pastime. That it's under yoga maya. Krishna forgets. The pure devotee forgets his position of pure devotional service. And therefore he may act as a common man sometimes. Like, you know, Prabhupada becoming a so-called follower of Mahatma Gandhi and the independence movement. So you may say, you know, why is he fighting for a nationalistic concern? Well, these are the pastimes of the Lord. And, or Vyasadeva getting attached when Shukadeva Goswami runs away and crying out, oh my son, oh my son. In fact, Shukadeva Goswami had to create a duplicate Shukadeva Goswami to pacify his father so his father wouldn't have a heart attack. So these are pastimes of the Lord and his devotees. So because of pastimes, sometimes devotees act like ordinary persons, and sometimes the Lord acts like an ordinary person. So with this in mind, we have four more minutes, and so we will unmute you all and allow you all, let's see, there's one question out there. Allow you all to ask questions. All right, you get two questions if you really behave yourself. All right, so Gopal, you're going to unmute yourself and ask a question.
Thank you, Gurudev. When we're talking about the Brahma Vimohana Leela, but the result of the Brahma Vimohana Leela came out to be some of the greatest prayers that we use as practically pivotal verses in our philosophy, like Stani Stata and Tatenu Kampam. So how is it that a great acharya like Madhvacharya, one of the four primary acharyas, didn't include such philosophy in their...
Well, certainly included the prayers, but not certainly none of the details of the pastime, because you just don't want to think. I mean, I basically don't want to think that Prabhupada was horrified when he was thinking of taking sannyas. Of course, you know, I can explain it because he was a very dutiful personality like that. But still, you know, we have this vision of a pure devotee that, you know, spiritual master says, take sannyas. Okay, goodbye. Like that. So, you know, this is mood. We have to understand his extreme mood of devotion to his spiritual master. And then you could also say Lord Indra's prayers are beautiful too.
Yeah.
And Lord Indra, you know, we recite Lord Indra's prayers, and Lord Indra was not a pure devotee. Maybe he is now. But at that particular juncture, you know, so basically, you know, Madhvacharya had no trouble with Lord Indra doing his thing, trying to kill the residents of Vrindavan. So, okay.
We also have Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna, I mean, who could be a more pure devotee than Arjuna? And, you know, because of his lamentation, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, so...
Yes. That's true, but Madhvacharya, because of his great attachment to Lord Brahma, didn't want to even consider it. So that's, you know, we could say devotees have this bhava, or emotional attachment.
So it's a bhava. It's a bhava relationship.
He loves his guru so much, you know. I love Prabhupada. I don't want to hear anything that may appear like Prabhupada wasn't Krishna conscious, because he was Krishna conscious from his very birth. You know, some people may say, you know, oh, Prabhupada asking for two water pistols, I don't want to hear that story. And it's true. I mean, sometimes, like, we hear stories about Krishna. Okay, let's go with what we were reading yesterday about the Motion Leela, the illusory pastimes of the Lord. Devotees don't like to hear that story, even though it's in the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada said the devotees don't like that story because it's an illusory story meant to bewilder the atheists. So you got to understand the pure devotee's bhav. Okay, on the other hand, we have Krishna Priya.
Jagirde, please accept my obeisances. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
So I was just reflecting on that whole point about the Brahma Mahoha Leela. And one thing I was reflecting upon was, like, in the difference between, you know, our philosophy, which was, you know, given to us through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and in the teachings of Madhvacharya, that because we have that whole Vrindavan mood that gets revealed to us through our previous acharyas. So for us, Lord Brahma is actually doing a service, because by stealing the place in the cows, then all the, you know, all the cows get to have Krishna as their son. You know, all the cowherd boys and women, they get to have Krishna. And I think one time you said that all the cowherd boys actually during got that married. Time got married, you know. So I was reflecting on that isn't that like the specialty that in our tradition, that is where that the cultivation of the rasa starts really developing in a whole different, more personal.
The concept of Leela and Yogamaya is not fully developed And also Madhvacharya, whoops, what happened here? So Madhvacharya didn't really get into the higher rasas, like the conjugal ras, so much. Although he was aware of it, he didn't get into it. He left that for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And well, there was another point about Madhvacharya and his understanding. Yeah, I mean, that was basically it. He was presenting things on an on-reverend basis where there wasn't a conception. He didn't develop the conception of yoga maya so much.
Exactly. Wasn't the time.
Yeah, wasn't the time. He didn't develop that conception of yoga maya and pastimes. He considered, I mean, he had other conceptions too that were quite different than ours, like the demigods were the best devotees because they were serving from that capacity. And it wasn't as developed as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. And he left that, basically, it's not that he didn't know those things, but he left that up to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to develop. Okay, so that was a good point. Any other questions? I think we had another question. Someone wanted to ask a question. Yes. Yeah, it's actually mentioned, I think I mentioned in the beginning that people would not have understood that. Like when Jesus says, I have so much to tell you, people would not have, it's the prerogative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to reveal the complete understanding. So even if people could understand, he left it up to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because there's certain things that are the prerogative of the Adhikar, or I don't want to say Adhikar in regard to the Lord, because the Lord has an unlimited Adhikar. There's certain things that the Lord, it's the Lord's prerogative to deal with. Like even we were talking about Advaitacharya, that Advaitacharya, even though he is God himself, he wanted Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come down to save all the conditioned souls. He felt that he couldn't do it. So certainly he could have, because he's not different than Krishna. However, because it's the prerogative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to do that, therefore you leave certain things for the person who's supposed to do them, which is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, I think we have to end now. I think it's time. So tomorrow is Ramanujacharya's appearance day, and we're going to be speaking about him in the morning and in the evening, and he's quite an interesting personality, also a personality who initiated his guru, just like Madhvacharya initiated his guru, but his interactions with his guru were a little bit more interesting and involved, well, I don't want to give it away, but involved some threats against Ramanujacharya and his escaping or being saved by his cousin from the threats of his guru who wanted to kill him. We'll talk about it tomorrow. That's just a coming attraction. Okay, on that happy note, we'll see everybody tomorrow. All glories to his divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.